Those of us who are sort of familiar with Revelation, there's quite a lot of imagery. So if you're new to Revelation, just look out for sort of what is it that's difficult or dangerous for God's people in this passage. And then you can start to think about, you know, maybe what those pictures represent a bit later on. But we'll have some help to do that. So let's read chapters 12 and 13. And a great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars. She was pregnant and was crying out in birth pains and the agony of giving birth. And another sign appeared in heaven. Behold, a great red dragon with 7 heads and 10 horns, and on his head 7 diadems. His tail swept down a third of the stars of heaven and cast them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was about to give birth, so that when she bore her child, he might devour it. She gave birth to a male child, one who is to rule all nations with a rod of iron. But her child was caught up to God and to his throne. And the woman fled into the wilderness, where she has a place prepared by God, in which she is to be nourished for 1,260 days. Now war arose in heaven, Michael and his angels fighting against the dragon. And the dragon and his angels fought back, but he was defeated, and there was no longer any place for them in heaven. And the great dragon was thrown down, that ancient serpent, who is called the devil and Satan, the deceiver of the whole world. He was thrown down to the earth, and his angels were thrown down with him. And I heard a loud voice in heaven saying, "Now the salvation and the power and the kingdom of our God and the authority of his Christ have come, for the accuser of our brothers has been thrown down, who accuses them day and night before our God. And they have conquered him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, for they loved not their lives even unto death. Therefore rejoice, O heavens, and you who dwell in them. But woe to you, O earth and sea, for the devil has come down to you in great wrath, because he knows that his time is short. And when the dragon saw that he had been thrown down to the earth, he pursued the woman who had given birth to the male child. The woman was given the 2 wings of the great eagle, so that she might fly from the serpent into the wilderness, to the place where she is to be nourished for a time and times, and half a time. The serpent poured water like a river out of his mouth after the woman to sweep her away with a flood. But the earth came to the help of the woman, and the earth opened up its mouth and swallowed the river that the dragon had poured from his mouth. Then the dragon became furious with the woman and went off to make war on the rest of her offspring, on those who keep the commandments of God and who hold to the testimony of Jesus. And he stood on the sand of the sea. Chapter 13. And I saw a beast rising out of the sea with 10 horns and 7 heads, with 10 diadems on its horns and blasphemous names on its heads. And the beast that I saw was like a leopard, its feet were like a bear's, and its mouth was like a lion's mouth. And to it the dragon gave its power and his throne and great authority. One of its heads seemed to have a mortal wound, but its mortal wound was healed. And the whole earth marveled as they followed the beast. And they worshipped the dragon, for he had given his authority to the beast. And they worshipped the beast, saying, "Who is like the beast, and who can fight against it?" And the beast was given a mouth, uttering haughty and blasphemous words, and it was allowed to exercise authority for 42 months. It opened its mouth to utter blasphemies against God, blaspheming his name and his dwelling, that is, those who dwell in heaven. Also, it was allowed to make war on the saints and to conquer them. And the authority was given it over every tribe and people and language and nation, and all who dwell on earth will worship it. Everyone whose name has not been written before the foundation of the world in the book of life, the Lamb who was slain. If anyone has an ear, let him hear. If anyone is to be taken captive, to captivity he goes. If anyone is to be slain with the sword must he be slain. Here is a call for the endurance and faith of the saints. Then I saw another beast rising out of the earth. It had 2 horns like a lamb, and it spoke like a dragon. It exercises all authority of the first beast in its presence, and makes the earth and its inhabitants worship the first beast, whose mortal wound was healed. It performs great signs, even making fire come down from heaven to earth in front of people. And by the signs that it is allowed to work in the presence of the beast, it deceives those who dwell on earth, telling them to make an image for the beast that was wounded by the sword and yet had lived. And it was allowed to give breath to the image of the beast, so that the image of the beast might even speak and might cause those who would not worship the image of the beast to be slain. Also it causes all, both great and small, both rich and poor, both free and slave, to be marked on the right hand or the forehead, so that no one can buy or sell unless he has a mark. That is the name of the beast or the number of his name. This calls for wisdom. Let the one who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666.
I'll begin by asking a question. And it's a personal question that I'm going to ask you. And don't worry, I won't pick on anyone to tell me the answer. So I'm not expecting people to have their hands up. This is just something for you to think about in your mind, so there's no pressure at all. And the question is this: what is really going on in your life right now? What is the main thing that's happening in your life? I wonder what you're thinking about. And there might be lots of things that you could say. Maybe your mind is like a shopping list at the moment. Well, I recently met up with a bunch of lads, and someone wiser than me said that when you daydream, it reveals the answer to that very question. When you're sitting on your sofa, when you're on a walk, when you're mindlessly working away, or you're just pottering at home, whatever occupies your mind shows you what you love, what you enjoy, and what you worry about. It tells you what your biggest affections are. It reveals what's on your heart. So what is really going on with you right now? I wonder what you're thinking about. And as I said, don't worry, you don't have to give me the answer. But there is someone that really cares about that answer. His name is Jesus. And he not only cares about that answer, but he wants to change the answer. He wants something else to dictate your daydream. He wants to change what occupies your mind. He wants to change what grabs your attention and where your eyes wander. He wants to change what captures your affections and what captures your heart. And the reason it's worth listening to him is because of Revelation. The storyline or plot of Revelation, whether you've read it or not, let me just tell you about it. It's a story about a throne. And you can read about that in chapter 4. And this throne is a beautiful throne. It is a glorious throne. It is God's throne. And this throne is journeying in chapter 4 from heaven, and it is coming down to earth. There is no throne higher than this one. And Jesus is the one worthy who is seated on the throne. He has all the power and all the authority of God himself, the creator of the universe, and is in fact God himself, God the Son. And when he comes to earth, he is going to change everything. He is the one who owns and controls the future, our future, your future, whether we like it or not, unfortunately. And the question is, why isn't he here yet? Do you see a throne in the sky? Because I don't. Why can't we see this throne now? What is he waiting for? Is there something that he is trying to achieve before he comes back? Well, I think that chapters 12 to 15 answer that question. And so my first point is about the war. Now, Jesus says to you and to me that we are all in a war. And if you look at verse 12 of chapter 12, you can see that. It says, "Therefore rejoice, O heavens, and you who dwell in them. But woe to you, O earth and sea, for the devil has come down in great wrath, because he knows his time is short." The devil has waged war on earth, and that means anyone on it, and that means you. Now, the devil in these chapters is the dragon, and he's made it his mission to wage war against God and to corrupt and to cause chaos to all of his plans and purposes. And he tries again and again and again. He is a relentless dragon. And it starts with this woman at the beginning of chapter 12 who's about to give birth to a son. And the dragon sort of hovers around waiting for her to give birth so that he can eat him up and devour him. It's really graphic, isn't it? And this child is actually Jesus. He's described like a king who rules all the nations. But what happens with the dragon? Well, he fails. He loses at that. And then it says that war in verse 7 breaks out in heaven. And Michael and his angels fight against the dragon and his angels. I mean, this would have been quite something to witness, wouldn't it? Something you'd want to see on the IMAX screen. But he loses that too. And it says that this dragon is thrown down to earth. He's hurled down to earth like he's been exiled or banished from heaven. But that doesn't stop him, because then he's attacking someone else. He's then starting to attack the woman herself. And it says in verse 15 that a river comes out of his mouth to sweep her away and to take her. But the woman gets saved by the earth. The dragon fails again. And all the way through chapter 12, you see that the dragon, the devil, is fighting a losing battle. But man, is he persistent. Now, I don't know if anyone's seen The Mummy from 1999. Hands up, show of hands, who's seen that? Okay, cool. Well, there's this, if you haven't, it doesn't matter. But there's this character called Ardef Bey. And he's the Magi warrior, sworn to defend the world from these mummy creatures. And they're quite scary. And he speaks of one of the mummy creatures called Imhotep, who has a relentless nature to bring death to the world. And he says this about him: he will never eat, he will never sleep, he will never stop. And I think the dragon, the devil, is very, very similar to Imhotep. His pursuit of corrupting God's plans are relentless. Even when he loses time and time again, he keeps on fighting. He keeps on attacking. And we cannot take him for granted. We really can't, because he decides to come after the woman's offspring instead. And in verse 17, these people are those who keep God's commands and who hold fast to the testimony or confession of Jesus. In other words, he's coming for Christians. We have to remember as well how this dragon operates. You'd think this dragon would be about killing and devouring Christians, and to some extent he is. You can just look what's happening now in North Korea and Nigeria. But that's not our experience in Britain, is it? And if you look closely at verse 9 of chapter 12, he's not described as the destroyer of the world. He's described as the one who deceives the world. And if you look in verse 10 of chapter 12, he's not the killer of Christians, no, but he's called the accuser of Christians. His weapons isn't his claws and his fangs. His weapon is his words. And it's always been his words. It's been his words from the very beginning. He lies about God to God's people so that they won't worship him. That is the devil, the dragon's tactics. And what John is seeing from a heaven's eye view, because he was invited back in chapter 4 to come up to heaven. One of the angels said, come up, let me show you what's happening in the world. What John sees happening in his visions, he's shown what's really going on. And what is really going on is that we're at war. But the question is, what is the war all about? What does the dragon really want? What does Jesus really want? And funnily enough, the answer is the same. They actually want the same thing. And that brings me on to my second point, which is about worship. Now, the dragon continues his attack by using these beasts in chapter 13. The beasts come from the sea. That's the first beast, and he's like a leopard and a bear and a lion. And it received all the power and authority of the dragon. The dragon donated it to him. It's been given authority, this beast, over God's people so that it can conquer them or win something over them. But not just over God's people, but also over every tribe, people, language and nation. In other words, the whole world. And the second beast, who comes from the earth, well, this beast's job is to simply help the first beast, to shine a spotlight on him. The second beast acted as kind of his right-hand man, unwavering in its loyalty to the first beast. It wants all the earth to honour the first beast. But just remember, they're both working on behalf of the dragon. Now, beasts is a funny term, isn't it? And I bet you're wondering, what on earth are they? We've been told the dragon is the devil, but who are the beasts? Well, if you know your Old Testament, you can look in Daniel chapter 7, and it tells us what beasts is an image for. Beasts are described as kings and emperors, empires and kingdoms. And John wrote Revelation, when he wrote it, in 2,000 years ago, there was only really one dominant empire. And unlike now, because we have lots of empires, don't we, and kingdoms with pretty similar power and influence, there's no one sort of top dog. But 2,000 years ago, there was. And the top dog 2,000 years ago was Rome. Now, I don't know loads about Roman history, but I do know that their military was unrivaled. Their economy was the best. And if you lived in Rome and bowed to Caesar, you'd receive peace, life, safety, and prosperity and blessing. In fact, Rome had a nickname, and its nickname was the Eternal City. A little bit arrogant, isn't it? This came from the idea that Rome would last forever in its dominance. It would survive the rise of other empires and kings and challengers. Well, look at it now. It doesn't exist in the same way, does it? Clearly not worth worshipping. And these are the beasts that John is writing about here 2,000 years ago. But we have to understand that if you lived back then, because Rome isn't so much important right now, but if you lived back then and decided to go against Rome, you would surely, surely lose. John even says in verse 13 of this first beast, look at verse 4 of 13, and they worshipped the dragon, for he had given his authority to the beast, and they worshipped the beast, saying, who is like the beast? Who can fight against it? The pressure you would have been under to bow down to Rome and to Caesar would have been super overwhelming. And if you didn't, then your life was in danger. Lots of people would have been killed. You see, what the dragon wants out of all of out of the beasts is to get the whole world to worship him and to worship them. We see that word sprinkled throughout the chapter in verse 13. Just look with me at four verses. Verse 4, and they worshipped the dragon, for they had given authority. I just read that verse. And they worshipped the beast, saying, who is like the beast? Then look at verse 8. All who dwell on earth will worship it, everyone whose name has not been written before the foundation of the world. Verse 12, it says, it exercises all the authority of the first beast in its presence and makes the earth and its inhabitants worship the first beast. And in verse 15, and it was allowed to give breath to the image of the beast, which is an idol, so that the image of the beast might even speak and might cause those who would not worship the image of the beast to be slain. This is a war all about worship. This is the worship war. And the dragon is after the whole world. And he does it by using these beasts. Now, on ground level, it looks like the best choice for you is to side with Rome. I mean, it really did look like the best choice back then, because Caesar would have been seen to have the highest throne. He had no challenges. But John isn't looking at it from the ground. He's looking at it from the heavens, where he sees Jesus from chapter 4 with the highest throne. And that's what Revelation is encouraging us to do today, to not look, ground level, but to get our lens from heaven, as John was invited to see the world as it is. We need to look at it from God's perspective. So who are the beasts today if it's not Rome? Well, another way to ask that, because there'll be lots, another way to ask that question is, who has the most influence over you? Who drives your decisions, or what drives your decisions? What demands your worship? And who do you give your worship to or your allegiance? This is a war about worship. And John is saying that you either worship the dragon or you worship Jesus. It looks at this point, though, that the dragon is winning, doesn't it? Because the beast is superseding everything and he's conquering the world, it looks like. So the question is, how is Jesus going to respond? What is the way that he fights back? And this brings me on to my third point. And the way that Jesus fights back is through his people. And just before I continue, Rob's going to come up and finish the reading for us.
To 7, and then from chapter 15, verses 1 to 4. Then I looked, and behold, on Mount Zion stood the Lamb, and with him 144,000 who had his name and his Father's name written on their foreheads. And I heard a voice from heaven like the roar of many waters and like the sound of loud thunder. The voice I heard was like the sound of harpists playing on their harps. And they were singing a new song before the throne and before the four living creatures and before the elders. No one could learn that song except the 144,000 who had been redeemed from the earth. It is these who have not defiled themselves with women, for they are virgins. It is these who follow the Lamb wherever he goes. These have been redeemed from mankind as first fruits for God and the Lamb, and in their mouth no lie was found, for they are blameless. Then I saw another angel flying directly overhead with an eternal gospel to proclaim to those who dwell on the earth, to every nation and tribe and language and people. And he said with a loud voice, "Fear God and give him glory, because the hour of his judgment has come, and worship him who made heaven and earth, the sea and the springs of water." Chapter 15. Then I saw another sign in heaven, great and amazing, seven angels with seven plagues, which are the last. For with them the wrath of God is finished. And I saw what appeared to be a sea of glass mingled with fire, and also those who had conquered the beast and its image, and the number of its name, standing beside the sea of glass with harps of God in their hands. And they sing the song of Moses, the servant of God, and the song of the Lamb, saying, "Great and amazing are your deeds, O Lord God the Almighty. Just and true are your ways, O King of the nations. Who will not fear, O Lord, and glorify your name? For you alone are holy. All nations will come and worship you, for your righteous acts have been revealed."
Well, these 144,000 is a numerical image for all of God's people. We see them in chapter 7 of Revelation as well. And they have marks on their foreheads, which is a funny image, isn't it? But these marks show who they worship and who they belong to. And they belong to God and the Lamb. Very much unlike the marks on the foreheads of those of the nations who belong to the beast. And they also sing a new song. A song that is only able to be sung if you've been forgiven of your sin by Jesus. And they look to the Lamb in verse 4. They look like the Lamb, in verse 4, because they follow the Lamb wherever he goes. And that they're also described as this kind of first fruits of God, or to God, which basically means we should expect more of them to come. A little bit like when you see the first fruit on a tree, you expect the whole tree to come into blossom soon. And which means we should expect more, but more what? Well, these first fruits are Christians. So we should expect more Christians to be converted, more Christians should be made, more people coming to worship Jesus, more people changing sides from worshipping this beast or whatever they're worshipping at the time to worshipping the one true God. And the question is, how does it happen? How do people change sides? How do people escape the claws of the dragon and then decide to worship the Lamb? Well, the way it gets done is through doing what I'm doing right now. It's really simple. You've got to use your words. You've got to speak. And it is through the speech in this chapter, chapter 14, that the 144,000 win. It is through Christians speaking truthfully about Jesus and what he has done. These 144,000 are described at the end of verse 5 as having no lie found in their mouths. They speak exactly the same as Jesus, who is full of grace and truth. It's tempting, isn't it, when thinking about speaking about Jesus, to just keep your mouth shut. We might not lie outright about him, but if you're like me, have you ever stayed quiet? It's easier to stay silent to save embarrassment sometimes, isn't it? It's easy to stay silent to prevent a misunderstanding or to protect yourself from judgment from someone else. One thing I've found particularly hard when thinking about this is whether it will drive like a wedge between my friendships and relationships, and whether it will ultimately change them, even lose them, which has actually happened in my life. I can think of one lad in particular. And if I'm honest, I'm scared of that happening again. And the question I have to keep coming back to is it worth it? Is it worth it? What's the main reason that you keep your mouth shut when it comes to speaking about Jesus? I wonder what you're thinking. Sometimes I do think, is it worth it? And when I think like that, what is it that I need to remember? Well, I need to remember what happens at the end of the war. And that was read in chapter 15. We need to remember who the real winner is. And that's my final point. Because in a war, why is it that soldiers might be tempted to flee the fight, to run off the battlefield, to escape no man's land? Well, it could be a number of reasons, but I think the main reason would be something like this. They'd speak to their fellow comrades, are we even going to win this? Are we fighting a losing battle? Well, can I just say that as a Christian, if you're a Christian here today, those words never, and I mean never, need to come out of your mouth. What did John see as he stood in heaven? And what did he see in verse 2 of chapter 15? Well, he sees the beast conquered. That's what it says. The beast that no one could conquer, that the nation said, who is like this beast? Who's going to conquer him? Well, in chapter 15, the beast is conquered. And in the battle for the worship of the world, God's people triumph. Jesus wins. And it is through the speech of the 144,000 that wins worship. Their testimony about Jesus works. It says in verse 4, all nations might come and might worship you. It says all nations will come and will worship you, speaking of Jesus. John gets to see the victory before it's fully happened. And this is exactly what I need to hear when I wonder, is it worth it? When I wonder whether I should keep my mouth shut. When I wonder whether I should be a coward. Speech really does work. And it really does work all over the world. Even in this country. Even in Chessington, which is where I'm from, obviously. People are coming to worship Jesus. And we wouldn't be Christians unless someone had done what to us? Unless someone had spoke to us. Speech really does work. So can I encourage you, as I finish, to be confident. Don't be a coward. At the start, I asked you a question. I asked, what is really going on in your life right now? Well, let me encourage you to look at the world through this lens. Jesus is not withholding his return so that you could be secretive about him. He's not doing that so that you could survive and be silent. He's not doing it He's doing it so that you would confidently confess with your mouth and with your words that Jesus Christ is Lord. That is why he has not returned yet, because he wants to achieve more worship of the nations, and he does that through his people. And when we finally do meet him when he returns, whether that's in a minute, in an hour or in a year or even longer. He's going to bring his people to a glorious future. And this future in Revelation 21 is one that I think no one would want to say no to. Let me read some of it. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and the sea was no more. And I saw a holy city, a new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, "Behold, the dwelling place of God is with man. He will wipe away, he will dwell with them, and he will be his people. And God himself will be with them as their God. And he will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and death shall be no more. Neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain anymore, for the former things have passed away." But before that happens, which is our great hope, we have to remember that we're in a war. We have to remember that the war is about winning the worship of the world. And the way Jesus has decided to win this war is through me and you speaking about him and testifying about him. And we can be confident that it works because we've seen the victory and he promised it will happen. I'm going to pray and then I'm going to hand back over to Rob. Father, thank you so much for your word. Thank you for this book of Revelation. Lord, I pray that we would really get to grips with the way that you have shown John what's really happening in this world. I pray that we would understand that we're in a war, that it's for worship, to worship you. Please help us to be confident and not cowards. Please help us to confess to our loved ones and to our friends and even to people we don't get on with that Jesus is Lord. We ask this in your Son's name, and we pray that you'd give us the strength to do it. Amen.